Well, I have to point out at this stage that I'm one of those pesky Antipodeans that Gail referred to yesterday. And at this point of the presentation, it's traditional for me to thank the organizers. However, I'm not so sure that I'm going to do that. I was reflecting last night, after the last session, that when I'm called to account by the university executive upon my return to account for the expenditure of Australian taxpayers' dollars to get me here, and I explained to the executive that there was a fantastic session on the leverage effect, they might take again me, because as all real Queenslanders know, the leverage effect refers to the principle which one relies on when you remove your four-wheel drive from the beach when you're stuck. And I'm not sure that they would think that an institute in Toronto would have anything to say on the leverage effect. That could be remotely interesting, as all Queenslanders are expert on that. So this is going to be a very simple talk. And essentially what I'm going to be talking about is quasi-maximum likelihood estimation of the parameters of diffusions. I'll talk a little bit about the basic idea, then I'll talk about the evolution of the moments of the transitional density function. I'll talk about how we can handle unobserved state variables. I'll give you a few simulation results if there's time, and then a few concluding comments. Okay, so the setup of the problem is familiar to all of you. We have a possibly n-dimensional process which satisfies the stochastic differential equation, where we have a drift function and diffusion function, and theta is the parameter vector which we need to estimate. And we need to estimate this parameter vector from a series of observations which are observed at discrete times. So a good place to start when thinking about the estimation of the parameter vector theta is the log likelihood function. In order to implement the log likelihood function, to construct the log likelihood function, we need a transitional probability density function. I denote the true transitional probability function F sub 0 here. And we're assuming that all the state variables are observed, and of course I'm ignoring starting conditions. And so the sum over all of the transitions gives us the log likelihood function. Now, this is intuitively a very nice way of thinking about it, but there are a number of problems which you all know. So the transitional density function and therefore the likelihood function is not known in closed form, and so this is another literature which I'm sure someone remarked yesterday, every one of you in the room has probably thought of a different way of estimating the parameters which circumvents the problem of the likelihood not being available in closed form. Even if the likelihood is easily constructed, generalization to estimation in multi-dimensions is not particularly easy. And then in multivariate models, we face an additional problem, and that's the problem of unobserved variables. So in terms of this particular research, we regarded our challenge as being to provide a simple yet comprehensive framework for the consistent estimation of the parameters of multivariate SDEs, and one that could handle unobserved states relatively easily. And I should point out at this stage, which I forgot to do at the opening slide, is that this is joint work with a friend and colleague from the University of Glasgow, Ken Lindsay. Okay, so I thought that at this stage of the proceedings we should introduce some philosophy, because there's been a lot of econometrics, a lot of finance, but not a lot of philosophy up to this point. And when I applied to study at Oxford, I actually applied to philosophy and politics, but they wouldn't have me and told me they would only have me if I did economics. So I've been a thwarted philosopher ever since. And in thinking about this project, which is a very simple project, I thought, where do I search for motivation and for support? And of course, the obvious answer came to me, and that was William Setch, who's also known as William of Ockham, who is famous for Ockham's razor. And of course, as a theory colleague pointed out to me, econometrics is just to study econometrics is to become yet more disillusioned, proved to be prophetic, because as you all know, Ockham's razor is entier non multiplicando praeter, non sunt multiplicando praeter necessitatem. Things should not be multiplied more than is necessary. Turns out he never actually said that. What he actually said is frustra fit plura quod potest fieri per patiora, which is the same thing but different. So I was yet again disillusioned, so I looked elsewhere and came up with Leonardo da Vinci, who said that simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. And I thought, yeah, we're on a roll now, so this is what we're going to do. But then I came across Karl Menger, who's an Austrian mathematician, who said it is vain to do with fewer what requires more. And so then I was totally stuffed. I didn't know what to do because I was searching for simplicity, but I might in fact be coming vain in so doing. So I thought that perhaps I would end up with something more pragmatic, and that is Sherlock Holmes in The Sign of Four, who said, when you have eliminated the impossible, Watson, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. And what he said, the way in which he explained it, was that I hold in my hand a series of strands, and I break each one and cast them aside, and the one that I have left in the end must be the solution to the case. And so I thought quasi-maximum likelihood was perhaps a string in the hands of econometricians that had been discarded a little bit too early, broken and discarded perhaps a little bit too early, and we should return. And I will forgive you if after this you echo the words of my economics tutor, who knew about my struggle to be admitted to philosophy, and after my first assignment remarked very dryly, "Ah, Hearn," he said, "philosophy's gain is economics' loss." Okay, so the simplest option is to use a Gaussian as the transitional density function. Okay, the previous speaker alluded to this. The simplest way of using the Gaussian is just to use an Euler approximation to the mean and the variance, and approximate the transitional density function of xt plus 1 by scaling the mean where you start and the diffusion by times delta in a linear kind of way. The polynomial expansion is also based on a Gaussian, but a little bit more complex in the sense that we use a transformed variable, we distort the Gaussian of the transformed variable with a series of Hermite polynomials, and we scale this by the Jacobian of the transformation. And this is very elegant, easy to do in one dimension for diffusions that are reducible. Yassin and I have discussions on whether it remains simple in multivariate settings. It's certainly very elegant, but the expansion, the coefficients of the expansion become pretty complex. So with quasi-maximum likelihood, what we were about was to go back to just taking a simple Gaussian, but then trying to find the correct mean and distribution and variance of the true transitional density function to plug into the Gaussian. How well did this? Our first flirtation with this seemed to work quite well. If you just take the CIR model and you march it forward for about a year with the kinds of parameters that you normally see, if this is the exact transitional density function, you can see that the simple Gaussian doesn't work quite well, but the Hermite polynomial expansion is starting to distort the Gaussian and pick up the correct features of the transitional density. Of course, I did have to rig the experiment by marching forward a long way, so that if you plug in the true mean and density, true mean and variance to the Gaussian approximation, you get very close in this particular example where the time step is quite big. So the basic idea is then to replace the transitional density function with a Gaussian and see if we can obtain the true mean and the true variance of the true transitional probability density function to plug into the Gaussian so that we can get consistent estimates. Okay, and it turns out that this is quite reasonable to do. If you take as your starting point the infinitesimal operator, then the infinitesimal operator has the very nice property that it expresses a derivative of the expected value of a function at the time derivative of the expected value of the function in terms of a state. Okay, and by choosing this function phi to be x and x squared respectively, we can actually get differential equations for the evolution of the mean and the diffusion of this SDE. And in one dimension, it's pretty straightforward. In multi-dimensions, it's not quite as straightforward. You have a whole series of equations for the mean, which you have to solve, and you have a matrix differential equation to solve for the diffusion. Let me give you an example. The Cox-Ingersoll-Ross model, the moment equations are given by this, and you can see that we have a really nice situation in where this integral here is nothing other than the first moment. This integral here is nothing but the first moment. So we have a differential equation in the first moment. Ditto for the second moment. Here we can replace this with M2. This is M1. This is M2. We can actually solve this system exactly. There's no need to resort to an Euler equation, Euler approximation, a Milstein approximation, any kind of expansion you like. Don't need to worry about it. I can find closed form solutions for the moments and therefore plug them into the Gaussian. What about the I should say that these are the solutions which you can plug in. What about an equation which is slightly more complex, like the CKLS one? Well, the story for the drift goes through, but now we have an extra term in the diffusion equation, which is a pesky integral of a form x to the beta, and if beta is not an integer, then this is not a moment of the transitional density function, and that causes us a little bit of a problem. However, what happens now is that F0 has to be replaced by F1 in that integral if we're to make any further progress in solving that differential equation, and that introduces two sources of error into our moment: an error due to the misspecification of the transitional density, F1 instead of F0, and a numerical error in terms of the approximation of that integral. Fortunately, the numerical approximation of that integral is really straightforward, because by doing a little bit of change of variable, I can write it in a very useful form, and approximating integrals of that form can be accomplished to optimal numerical precision by using a Gauss-Hermite quadrature. So essentially what we do is we eliminate the source of error which is due to the numerical part of the integral, and we're left with the inescapable fact that we have misspecified the density. So in conclusion, for the moment part of the exercise, if the drift and diffusion are affine, then we can always find a closed form solution for the true moments of the unknown density function. I don't need to know F0 in order to find the true moments. If the drift and diffusion functions are non-affine, we can't compute them exactly. We have to approximate the integral. But in a lot of the problems with which we all deal on a daily basis, the actual approximation is reduced to approximating an integral that we can do very, very effectively. And we can actually show that the leading driver of the error in the approximation arises from the first unsatisfied moment condition. So in a lot of cases where we have an affine drift and nonlinear diffusion, actually solving the drift equation exactly reduces the error component which drives the divergence in the approximation due to using the Gaussian as opposed to the true variable, the true transitional density. Okay, so now in terms of dealing with unobserved state variables, well, there are three things we can do in a maximum likelihood context. We can use a proxy, or we can use the procedure that Yassin and Bob Kimmel produced of enlarging the state space and then using a Jacobian of the transformation to get the likelihood of the unobservables in terms of the observables, or you can just integrate out the unobservables. And our method is equally applicable to 1 and 2, although we haven't done that yet. We were really concerned with trying to integrate out the unobservables and see what happens. Now, this is best described in terms of a bivariate normal. Now, I'm very much a one-dimensional kind of guy, so moving to two dimensions is quite exciting for me. You can see that if we only observe x and we don't observe y, what we need to construct the likelihood function is the marginal with respect to x, And the beauty of this is that the marginal with respect to x is just another Gaussian, and with a known mean and a known variance. And if we take that to n dimensions, it's no more difficult than this simple illustration is here, except for the fact that the variance of the distribution is a covariance matrix, which is the k by k leading minor of the variance of the original system. So that's pretty straightforward. What is more tricky is what you do in order to move on from where you are, because now you have an unobserved variable, and what you need is the conditional density so that you can use this conditional as the starting point for your next transition. And we all know that conditioning the bivariate is very easy as well. It's just another Gaussian with a mean and a variance that you need to determine. In multi-dimensions, it's not quite as easy as just reading off a minor of the original covariance matrix. There's a little bit of algebra that has to be done, but essentially all it is a Gaussian with a mean and a variance that you have to compute. So integrating out the observables is very, very, very easy if one allows oneself to approximate the transitional density in terms of a Gaussian. Okay, so some simulation results just to wrap up, because I think I'm more or less right on time. Works brilliantly for the CIR, the CKLS. I guess the only thing of note over here, these results are very similar to results that you've all seen before, so it doesn't disgrace itself by any matter of means. What you will notice is that for this particular simple model, it doesn't really matter whether you use a Gauss-Hermite quadrature of order 5 or of order 7. The results are exactly the same. In terms of a bivariate Feller model, we produce some simulations to show that this works just as well as some of the general method of moments results that I've been looking at recently. But we can also just arbitrarily set y to be unobserved and then estimate the parameters of the model from treating y as unobserved. And you can see, of course, that because you're using half the information, the bias and the mean square error is significantly increased. But by the time you get up to, you know, reasonable data sets, you're starting to reproduce at least the kinds of values that you get using full information in the 500 transition case. And then finally, looking at the Heston model, we're able to reproduce for the unconditioned case where we artificially take volatility as observed. We can reproduce the results that Yassin and Bob Kimmel report in one of their papers exactly. We can condition this. We notice that the point estimates are very much still the same, but obviously the root mean square errors have increased. So in conclusion, QML yields consistent estimates of the parameters of SDEs when the drift and diffusion functions are affine functions of state. We can't prove consistency for non-affine models, but in practice the method works very well, and the good performance is that for the models that we consider is perhaps related to the special form of the integrals involved. The method works well for bivariate models and is capable of handling unobserved state variables very easily. And I think I'm just about on time.